This week on RSVMB Update, it's the final countdown as necromancy is just days away. We spirit ourselves away to the city of and discover the ambience, discuss a preview of necromancy combat, and cover adjustments to XP and crits. Then we also say goodbye to Protean Planks. This is RSVMB Update, episode 946, recorded Thursday, August 3rd, 2023. Adore the door. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. We are just days now away from the launch of Necromancy, and it's something that, well, I'll get into my problems with it later. But nonetheless, Tanis, welcome aboard.
Thank you, Shane.
Also joining us this week is Thaxi.
Hello, hello.
And Zant is also here. Welcome, Zant.
Hey, what's up?
Great to have you both here. You guys are here because we just want to, you know, first sit in awe and look at the beautiful cityscape of the city of amongst other things, talk about some of the environment related angles on that, but also, of course, look into a very close to launch aspect of how the combat is going to be looking at necromancy, get some of our initial thoughts down on that since we haven't done that, and of course run over the patch notes from last week that we didn't talk about because we had our Mod Doom episode of Behind the Crown. So if you haven't listened to that, go press pause, go listen to the Mod Doom episode. That was definitely a fun one to record, but also I just want to give a huge thank you before we begin to the folks of our RSVMB Update experience tier with whom what we do here at Update would not be possible. This week I'd like to thank Andrew C., Drama Free, Jason S., Jesse W., Keski, Maniac RS, Ricky A., Rippeth, Seth W., and The Naked Captain. Of course, big, big, huge thank you goes out to all of you guys for what you do in allowing us to make RSVMB Update possible. We just love what we do here, and you guys allow us to do it. So big, big, huge thank you. But before we get too far down the road with a bunch of ums and ahs and oohs about the city of just a reminder, you can find full show notes at update.show. Tanis can be found at in-game, Tanis79. Thaxi is recently back at Thaxi. Zant is at iZant, and you can find me in-game at Shane12088. Of course, we also have our Discord at rsbnb.com/discord and the French chat, Bits Bytes. Okay, City of we go to you, Zant, first on this because this is, I think, the first big new expansive area that we've had in game aside from Centistan, right?
I think so. I haven't been too attentive to updates in the past bit, so I could have been missing something, but I believe it was Centistan as the last huge area.
Yeah. What do you make of the blue, green, purple color scheme on this? I know how you feel about purples.
Yes. I don't know. First, when I first saw it, I was kind of mixed because it is just blue, blue, crazy amounts of blue. But it's got a lot of cool effects going on. Like, look at the skybox and all the stuff going on with that. And then I don't know. The more and more I look at it, it's got this weird classical style going on. And I feel like its entire lighting style and all the visuals kind of feed into this motif of kind of like comfort that they're trying to capture with this space. And I feel like that kind of hones in onto the thing where the city is built up upon the souls that have returned here and their memories.
Yeah.
So to those souls, I'm sure this place is really cozy and it feels like home to them.
Right,
so
because you're supposed to be just passing through after you die on your way to the afterlife. That's what Om is for.
Yeah. So when viewing it from that angle, it just has this really nice quaintness to it. And I'm really excited to really get in and explore it and just honestly just take in the vibes because it looks really cozy. And that crazy effect they got going on with the skybox, it looks like you can see like the souls like rising up. It's so cool. I could gawk on about it for a while, but this space is looking really pretty.
And I imagine it's going to be an entirely different perspective when you manage to put your head in there next week and actually, you know, explore and move the cameras around and whatnot.
Yeah, and I feel like this is going to become one of those spaces in RS that becomes a bit special to the players, because, I mean, I get the feeling we're going to be here a lot. Like, we're going to get to know this place in and out. So. Yeah.
And you know, I think they could do that. I think they could do that with necromancy, because archaeology has, you know, 5 or 6 key dig sites where you experience the skill spread throughout the entire world. Now, obviously, with the city of this is going to be the hub point for necromancy. But they are able to take necromancy out of because it's a combat skill, and you can use it everywhere else because of that. So that's why I think that works in that regard. So, Tanis, how does this look initially based on the blues and whatnot, just in terms of the hues, the contrasts, and all that with your eyes?
I didn't know it was blue, but...
Okay, what color did it look like to you?
You know, it's really weird. I can't really tell between blue and green. It just, it's just a shade, right? So,
okay, so it's like somewhere in between then, or is it a grayish?
Yeah, I don't... Yeah, more of a gray, but
generic cool color.
Yeah, I don't foresee problems. It just depends on if they try to hide anything, right? Like that's where I have difficulty.
Yeah, well, the ritual site looked relatively well highlighted from what we've seen on that, and you know, we'll be seeing the tutorial very soon with that. Thaxi, first thoughts on
I mean, it looks really good. I'm very excited to see what they mean when they say the city will grow with us and become more inhabited. Like, I'm hoping it's very well done, and there's like, when we get there, it's a main plaza, a little ritual area, and, like, a bank. And nothing else. And, like, as we grow the city, we unlock huge amounts of extra for it, and it's, you know, we're unlocking neighborhoods and things. They keep mentioning the psychiatrist, which I have a feeling is more of a joke than anything else, but like, there's potential for like a lot of the like, and it sounds like, do we know how many quests are going to be involved in the release of this? Like, it sounds like there's a lot of opportunity for quests.
But a bunch are archaeology mysteries plus a bit.
Right. So we know there's 8 types of runes that we're going to be able to pull out of that ritual site, right? It's like where they say that, yes, you'll have skilling methods to make things. I have a feeling that could be very repetitive if there's only 8 of them. So I'm a little nervous about that as a, like, first opinion for the city itself, because that's what my sense of what we would spend a lot of time doing in the city was that ritual site.
Yeah.
And then the bosses. Yeah. And then the rest of it sounds like it's just a story hub, but with 9 quests, you know, hopefully we'll be passing through often enough. We'll see kind of what all that looks like. I mean, I think it looks really pretty. I will say it's kind of like Prif when Prif goes into winter mode and they put the cooler, bluer kind of filter over it. Like, I love that at first, but by the time, like, January comes, I just want to get rid of it. Like, I'm super done with the, like, I want the, like, warmer colors back. They just feel better to me, like, porting into Prif during that, like, the end of that time always felt a little bit draining.
Or, you know, spend, like a 4-hour XP session in Prif when that blue is on, right?
Well, it's not even that crazy. It's just that, like, when it first came out, I'm so excited for it to be there. It's such a neat new change. But I do like warmer, brighter game areas. So I'm hoping that at least there will be some, like, a lot of pop to the city. And I'm not sure I see that. It's definitely, like, a darker themed skill. So, like, I don't know exactly how much time I'm looking forward to spending there, to be totally honest. I mean, we'll see how it looks with various. I have a feeling that, like, putting on Bloodstone is going to be really funny, because you're not going to be able to see anything in that place.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Go ahead, Zan.
I'm curious about the skyboxes, because you know how the Citadel is, like, up in the sky? I'm pretty sure that's...
Yeah, do you think
it looks like a part of the skybox? I think it is.
We're going to be able to get rid of it.
Get rid of the Citadel. Oh, goodbye.
No.
First Necromancer defeated.
Put a warm filter on it. Ta-da! No.
It's going to be fun.
I mean, maybe.
It's going to be fun teleporting away from this place.
That's my first thought. first thought looking at it is, like, it looks like a hub we pass, like, because I'm not sure what we don't know what we do there yet. We know it's the hub for necromancy, but we don't, like, I'm not...
We know rituals, but beyond that...
Yeah, like, again, only 8 types of runes. I don't know what these rituals do, and maybe they make different combinations, there's different levels of them or something, or there's some variety, like, there's some random element to it, which would be nice.
Well, the way it works is that you can hone the rituals between, I think it was XP, talent points, and there was something else.
Oh, so maybe it'll do a random selection of runes and the things themselves are a little more varied. That would be nice.
Or no.
Static.
No. So it's XP, talent points, and also it's the third party item that's used to convert pure essence into the kind of essence you need to make the runes. That's what it is.
Oh, to make the runes. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. So hopefully,
and you're
going
to be able to balance the rituals based on how you want to play with that to determine what you get.
But, I mean, point in case, the, like, I'm not entirely sure what we do in the, like, again, I really plan to train this skill through Slayer, to be honest with you. Like, I'm just going to go to the Slayer Masters, lowest, highest, and just as I gain levels, and we'll talk about the XP rebalancing in a bit, we'll talk about why I think that's going to be such an enjoyable thing to do. Like, I'm actually really looking forward to it, based on the changes that they've made and what I can see from them. But I'm not sure what I'm going to be doing in this city other than passing through for quests. And I think it looks like a gorgeous quest location. So I'm excited from that aspect. Always happy for a new city. I'm just not sure what they're going to add that's going to be hub-like other than the ritual site.
Yeah, and you know, I feel like everything that we've been highlighting here is going to become clear as soon as we get into the skill. And I also have to point out that there is a pub there that is inhabited by skeletons presently.
I mean, but there's also a pub in every major city in the game, and we all know how often we visit the Blue Moon and the, you know, I don't even remember the name of the pub in Fowler. I should. It's on the tip of my tongue, but it's like, they're there. They have to have them. They're a quest location. Yeah. There's so many quests.
Ricky says that we're going to be locked out of the Max Guild, there should be a GE in them.
I wouldn't be mad. I'm going to be, like, honestly planning to use the GE in Nenophos a lot more.
I see where you're going with that. I see where you're going with that.
Or the Tower of Voices, but, like, I like Nenophos as a place, so...
I kind of forgot that the Tower of Voices existed for a GE location, if I'm being 100%
honest. I've always liked that GE location more than the Max Guild. Just, it feels more
the
lively.
Tower of Voices?
Yeah.
It is. I mean, Max Guild has always been a place people have passed through versus the Tower of Voices. People may
it's
actually stand
counter.
And share. It's a counter. Yes, that's true. But it's got a nice chair.
And
it's a and counter with like 50 people standing in front of it.
The bonfire is really, really nice.
they're calling the Citadel. Raziel, the first necromancer Citadel, the elephant in the sky. From here, he orchestrates his terrible plans to end life as we know it. And he says this is an ever-present reminder of what you must face. Like the city itself, the Citadel is formed and shaped by the memories of its inhabitants, and Raziel has twisted it to be a font of dangerous necromantic energies. So,
In the post, they say necromantic energies are purple and the fortress is green, but, you know, it's fine.
What I want to know is, when you're standing on that fortress with all the green around you, can you see the city below you?
Oh.
I hope so. That would be appropriate. And you can see the Temple of Ikov from Skyguard Citadel in the skybox. Like, I don't see why they wouldn't be able to do that.
You know what I think we're going to be all realizing with this? When this drops, I think we're all going to be realizing how powerful our graphics cards are and if they're able to handle it.
RuneScape shouldn't push any modern graphics.
I don't
worry.
I don't know that this space is going to push that any more than the place
There's
like
not
Sentinel
enough draw
would.
Distance for that
well,
world.
I'm mainly just worried about my Mac. That's kind of what I'm talking about right now.
Oh, well, get a PC, Shane.
I have one, but most of the time I'm on the Mac. Anyways, anything else on the city of before we move on to last week's patch notes?
I just want to say, make sure y'all take a look at the actual dev blog page and look at all the screenshots. Yeah. There's just a lot of great stuff on there. A lot of cool angles you can see. And there's also this little forested area that looks really psychedelic and really cool. And also one little detail. Yeah, dude, it's looking really good so far. One other little detail I noticed from one of the creator videos, which I was kind of curious about this area, is how are you going to get to the city of from the surface? And it turns out, north of Draenor, north of Draenor Lodestone, where you go to War's Retreat and Death's Hourglass. It's going to be that big doorway in between those two items that you click
between
on.
Between Death's Hourglass and the War's Retreat war face.
And I think that's so cool. I've always wondered if they were ever going to do something with that door, because it's just been there.
It's been an option.
I adore that. I just needed
to. You adore that. The door.
I adore the door.
Amazing.
I'm sorry. I just
I noticed that too. Definitely exciting. I wonder where the Lodestone location is. Because, on the Lodestone map, obviously, the Lodestone is the map of the game. I wonder if they're just going to stick it in a corner somewhere?
That's actually in
It doesn't matter. That's just, something that I'm sure they've thought about, and I'm curious what they ended up going with. But we'll find out on Monday.
That's in the City of page. I think there's a screenshot of it.
Yeah, there's a picture of where it is, but he's talking about on the little map when you press the Lodestone map button.
Yeah.
Oh, that is interesting.
The other ones are on the overworld, right?
Yeah, that is interesting.
Do you have any other Lodestones that aren't overworld map Lodestones? I'm guessing it'll just be in a little corner, but where do they put the Tuska event one? Did they put it in the sky? Put it over Anachronia, but Anachronia is where Anachronia is now, so that's not going to be an option.
I guess we'll find out.
It doesn't really matter. It's just a little, warped wise man wonders.
Do you think it could potentially maybe not be a Lodestone like we think it is?
It's a Lodestone. They've told us it's a Lodestone. Yeah, okay. There's a Lodestone in the main plaza, so we're good there.
Okay, good.
I do have to say that just like everything else that they've been doing tentpole content wise, they have hit the mark on the environment for this. The last big environments we had like this was Centiston when it comes to that. And then, Elite Dungeon 4 is another one that comes up. And obviously the fort and whatnot and all the intervening graphical updates look good. But this is, again, I think, pushing the boundary of RuneScape. And we get to a point where we're starting to see that general graphical identity that we've talked about time and time again appear.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
With that, I'm content to move on to our patch notes from last week, and this one's a bit of a controversial one, especially with double XP going on at this point in time. a major change to the way Protean planks work. Following the 4 and 3 updates. So they're making them more in line with other Protean resources so that they can no longer be used to build things, and you can't cut Protean logs into planks, but you can still convert them at the usual 3-2 conversion rate. They'll behave more like Protean bars, where you have a make-x interaction with them, and you'll consume one plank at a time, at a rate of 1 every 7 ticks, which is reduced to 6 with the Protean power-up, and they produce no other output
really slow
than XP. RIP Protean planks? Question mark?
Oh, yeah, no, they're dead.
Yeah,
They were pretty dead to begin with, but they were really nice XP for, making prawn brokers and other stuff with, where you didn't have to deal with sending a servant to the bank and stuff. It just
I didn't even think of the player-owned house aspects. I just thought of everybody using them for elders in the fort, because buildings now require elders at the high end.
Well, that same aspect is kind of useful elsewhere, where they kind of just functioned as whatever plank you needed.
Yeah. Contracts.
I'm really hoping that there's like they make some stackable plank. If it gives zero XP and like can't be used to make stuff that's tradable, like frames, like I would love to have something to use to make like hidey holes for clues, something to make like
contracts.
The farm paddocks. Like, contracts, you at least have a plank box, although it was nice to get going with them. Like, yeah, stackable planks was a really nice commodity, but like, again, on contracts, that's them giving you XP. I don't know. Like, I'm not requiring that here. I just liked the utility of them for, like, even questing. They were really nice for questing. And the fact that you now can't use them for that, it's like, there's a lot of things that just became a little more obnoxious.
Yeah, and they say these
having
changes.
Some kind of a stackable plank order would be really good.
The changes represent a decrease in XP per hour from the items, but also represent a decrease in skilling intensity in line with other Proteans. It is, however, a buff. It is an XP buff to Protean planks at level 60 and above, topping out at level 90 with a 2.25 times more XP per plank than before. And I want to talk about this from the woodcutter's angle, because we know, of course, that you, Magic, and now Elder Logs, in addition to everything else, can be made into planks and used at the fort, which provides some of the best AFK construction training XP in the game. And, you know, we've talked about before how U logs come from Saren Spirits. Magic logs are printed by Talos, amongst other boss creatures and whatnot. Right now, elders are cut by players. And what I see here is that this is preserving and enhancing the woodcutting economy to the point where I think, I want to say, for me, the next step on that side is going to be removing you and magic logs and other logs from drop tables. That's what I'd like to see happen next on this, because it makes woodcutting into something that can be done for profit.
Well, okay. Yes, and the deal with that is that you have to keep in mind how much they're being used, right? You've always had corrupted magic logs. But, like, in this case, you have to really think about how many magic logs are being used for stuff. Like, we go through a lot of magic logs. You pull them off drop tables. Nobody's cutting magic trees, Shane. When was the last time you saw somebody cutting a magic tree? Like, I'll wait.
When somebody got 99 wood cutting.
It's been a long time.
And for what it's worth, when Woodcutter's Grove came out, they did say that they significantly increased the chop rates on you and magic. I know, Tanis, you said that you'd been doing an amount of wood cutting coming into this week, I think. Or was that this week, or was that some other time that we were talking about that?
I mean, it was prior, but okay. Yeah. I mean, the elders are pretty nice. I mean, magic is better, but you can't... It's never going to be viable when you can just print them the way. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. Like, you would not cut magic, even with the changes. You can't compete with the drops. Yeah. Elders, I think, are fine. I think this fixed it. But they see this. This is where you took a hatchet. And it needed a scalpel, right? Like, I really thought that had they just made this change and it applied to elders, I was totally fine with that. Like that
yeah,
was fine.
But I don't think you can just make it to one plank type. I think you got to do a blanket for that.
Yeah, which really, I don't know.
I mean, I wouldn't have minded if they just said protean planks can only be used to make regular oak, teak, and mahogany. Like,
yeah,
if they said those,
okay, that
those
would be
uses,
a compromise.
These planks are interchangeable. I would be totally with that because that keeps the status quo how it was, which is seemingly was working. Like, I dislike that they got rid of the utility of the item. Now, again, it's a microtransaction item. Like, it's clearly not part of the main gameplay loop. If they wanted to put it into a gameplay loop item, if they wanted to make it a reward, if they wanted to stick it like the stackable arrow shafts you get from, you know, the Anachronia farm, great. Like, that would be a great reward space for a stackable plank. Like, I would be willing to pay extra money to have a stack of planks for these, like, special and questing occasions. Like, that would be super worth it to me. And I would love to see something like that in game. But currently, they got rid of my toy, and I'm sad about it.
And
and
you know, I think this is a good perspective to have, because we were asked about this at the last round table, and I think everybody was uniformly happy about it. So that's good to bring that up. And then rather than just, you know, complaining about it like some people do, we actually put forward a solution on that. So
once I got my construction pet, I did the rest of 120 construction using these, like, fully AFK, like just spamming my left click, or almost full. Like, it was a very, like, monotonous clicking process.
Yeah, you got to figure work out.
Prom burgers. Yeah, the XP weights were delicious and probably clearly overpowered, but just saying, it's also been quite a while.
All right. Moving on from that, in Dead and Buried, they prevented the undead from dropping more map pieces than necessary in that final puzzle bit. And nightmares in the dream can no longer be killed by poison or reflect damage. There's an interesting idea. I don't know.
Three skillers? Question mark?
Maybe that could have been a way to do it, but I don't know.
They have other options?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if a skiller could get through that quest, if I'm being honest, but we'll save that for...
What quest?
Dead and Buried, the one you absolutely adored.
Oh.
Players will no longer get stuck inside the burning house during the raptor's dream. I don't think you would want to have that happen. So, okay. And the fetid zombies in the Dead and Buried quest have also been firmly reminded that they are not speed zombies. Henceforth, they shall walk, not run. I don't think we've seen any running zombies in that quest, but it is what it is. All right. I'm going to thank some Patreon supporters because of, as we know, update would not be possible with this without the support of everyone. So this week I'd like to thank Alaska, Alfie S, Amos Reed, Anatoly D, Andrew C, Arvids L, Chunk the Monk, Cycle RS, Dominic R, Drama Free, Duramax, Free Milk, G Hammy, Guy Lafleur, Jacob G, Jade Gizmo, Jason S, Jeebus, Jesse W, Jim M, Keski, Killer Snowball, Ling01, Malinoric, Maniac RS, Mohan V, Nate the Great, Pernasius, Renhawk, Ricky A, Rippeth, RS Nerdherd, Samuel FL, Scott DS, Seth W, Shirtpants, Tanner JW, Thule, The Naked Captain, The Dabbing Goat, Tim, Tom V, Ukulele Steve, and Zant, who also happens to be sitting right here with us.
Hello.
But, of course, a big, huge thank you goes out to everybody for allowing us to do what we do here. You can learn more about it at patreon.com/rsbnb. You guys have just voted for our next monthly bit, which is going to be the calendar year tier list, going back to 2001 and rating each year. You guys love your tier lists, so it's going to be interesting to record that one. I think I have an idea about which ones are going to fall in the top tier, but of course we got to do it with the rubric, not of course how we feel. And if you want to hear that episode or the entire back collection of all of the other 60 plus monthly bits at this point, including last month's on archaeology, many dig sites, check us out at patreon.com/rsbnb. There you can sign up for as little as a dollar a month. And with that, you get that back catalog, the ability to vote in our polls and attend the monthly roundtable, and a mention in our show notes as well. We also have a VIP tier for $3 a month, where you receive a special shout-out at the start of the month, high-quality stereo versions of the podcast, as well as a Discord rank and special chat channel. Then we have our $5 RSBNB Update Insider tier, which Patreon says is the most popular, and that's because you receive the clips that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year, which everybody knows that those can be spicy at times. But with that, we'll also send you out a Christmas card every December with that. And of course, we have the RSBNB update experience tier. I mentioned those wonderful folks at the start of the episode, but that tier is presently sold out. So big, big, huge thank you to everybody who supports us here. Would not be possible without you guys. So big, huge round of applause to all our Patreon supporters. Thanks so much, everyone.
Yay.
All right. Combat, necromancy's insights on combat. Tanis, we got this blog post here. It's kind of filling in the gaps of what we knew. Initial first thoughts about what you're going to be doing with this.
Well, my first thought is, Taxi, don't let me down.
Yep, I got you, brother. We're gonna have a great old time.
I volunteered him to help. He didn't know until just now.
He knew it.
No, but it's gonna be a little bit taller of an order. And there's been a few other complications behind the scenes with some of the HP like alerts and stuff like that I was hoping for, but I'm still hopeful that, you know, the creatures or whatever, I'm hopeful that they can do my damage, and maybe for the first time I can try to get away thing, right? Just the less I can, like, the more I can take off my plate, and I still think that's going to hold true. It's just going to be a little more complicated than I first thought.
And to be clear, what you're talking about is going on a PVM push.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll talk about it. I'm very excited. The skill is interesting to me, and I'm going to reserve a lot of my judgment about build options until I've gotten a chance to test them myself.
I think that's smart, because we could have went the other way and presented some potential of those this week. Okay. Zant, how are you feeling? I know you did your PVM stream before, and you camp necks and whatnot, so I guess that's your benchmark.
I mean, I would consider myself at this point in time to be what I guess could be referred to as a lapsed PVMer.
I'm retired back in my day.
I don't do it much anymore, but I would love for the skill to be like an easy like on-ramp for me to get back into it a bit again. But at the very least, like, I'm going to start with Slayer probably, maybe some easier bosses, and then work my way up.
Why is everybody starting with Slayer?
It's just...
Pause, Shane. I don't want to kill the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. I want variety. And what the combat? Easiest way to get variety at an appropriate combat bracket for me is to go to an appropriate Slayer Master and say, hey, gimme, gimme.
What else combat do you really do besides PVM and RuneScape?
Shadow Warriors.
Huh? I mean, you could just go really hard into Dominion Tower.
You know,
we've been there. We're not going back for that.
I am going to go back. We're going to talk about this today. Oh, they gave some busted shit there that is.
Okay.
Forgive my language.
Okay, Zant. Nice.
Wait, actually, no. I'm going to play Castle Wars. I'm going to play Castle Wars.
Are you guys all trolling me?
You're going to go kill the fire elementals in Soul Wars for soul shards?
Are you guys trolling me?
Slayer XP
Tanis with going on PVM. Zant with doing whatever you said you were going to do, and Thaxi with whatever nonsense you're talking about right now. I feel like you guys are all trolling me.
No, you didn't know it. But...
The whole point is that you've got a lot of, like, all these things, ways to level skills that are not Elite Dungeons 3 that I'm very excited to do, because I'm not planning to hardcore grind till I'm 120. You know? I'm excited to enjoy the journey of being a low level again for a while.
Yes, that.
And we're going to talk about the changes they've made, which, again, I think are going to make that a much more enjoyable experience, and we'll talk about it.
All right, so then just a quick recap then for people who have not been following the necromancy combat style up to this point.
Yes, so let's take a second to talk about framing on it and what it's like, right? What we know so far.
I don't like the approachable to everybody frame like Death and Taxes.
Really? See, here's my opinion on it as a skill. And I want to talk about the comparison to it, but we can save that for a bit in terms of how we compare it to other styles. Because this, which we're talking about now, is really the like soul of the combat style and what it involves, right? Like, our previous styles, melee, you run up and hit something, and we've kind of, it's given itself this, like, bleeds are its thing now. Range is how many times can you hit the target in a short period of time. Like, those are the kind of the identities of those combat styles. The identity that I'm seeing on initial look, Shane did tell me that the abilities for Necromancy have all been posted with descriptions to the wiki. I'm not going to spoil them here. But I will give you some general overviews on what the style involves, and that it's a lot of resource management. It's a lot of, and I don't know how complicated that resource management is going to be beyond, like, it might be just straight up revolutionable. It might be one of those things where you just, like, you know, that I just cast this and now I'm going to cast this, but they've added in the combat style alone, in addition to adrenaline, has stacks that are called Curse, Necrosis, Rage, and Residual Souls. And there may be others, but those are the ones that I saw on a cursory glance, in addition to the actual runes that you use to cast necromancy whatevers. Right? As well as two different new types of dots. Yeah. So there's going to, it seems like it is something of a management minigame where, like, rage is specific to your summons and souls are specific to you, and curse might be something that kind of, like, comes from one and goes to the other. And then the necrosis stacks decrease cost for things. Like, one of the things that's in this blog post, which I'm going to call not a spoiler at this point because a blog post, is that these necrosis stacks decrease the cost of an ability. And that's really where we get into, like, looking at how these things compare to one another. In terms of, like, damage and stuff. Because this seems like they are living up to their promise of saying, if you really dive into the combat style, you will have benefit from it. And that's not to say that there's not a rotation out there where you, like, really simply, like, you hit this button and then this button whenever you can, and you do good damage. Right. And there's definitely a world where that's true.
I also want to say,
I'm seeing a lot of area of effect damage. I'm seeing a lot of, like, self-target abilities. Like, there's a number of these things that are, like, in the old combat style, you had Shane or Ricochet. Like, you had these abilities that you would put on your bar if you were hitting multiple targets, and that was the whole customization of the style for it. This seems to have a much wider, like, variety in terms of, like, the choices you make of when you activate abilities to have single versus multi-target damage.
There's also the fun fact with this that, and, you know, I'll just say that they have updated all the tooltips and whatnot, which is a very important thing with this to showcase how the abilities interact and what their tool, or rather, how they're targeted.
Making combat continually more readable, which
exactly,
is good.
Exactly. And the basic attacks actually generate a significant amount of adrenaline, 9% base, not factoring in any boosters that you have going for that. And they're more powerful than the basic attacks in other styles. And I think you're right that we need to focus on this as being that resource management minigame, because as you generate more necrosis stacks, this ability they're talking about, the Finger of Death, one of the ones that's unlocked shortly after you start off, lowers its adrenaline cost by 10% for each necrosis stack. So it starts off at a whopping 60%. Then at two necrosis stacks, you're down to 40%. And if you, in theory, wanted to, you know, wait for six necrosis stacks, you get this ability that you're going to fire off for free on that. So there's that aspect of it, and there's also the damage scaling aspect of it too, as well. And they call this the Builder Spender gameplay, and, you know, I'm a huge fan of that from other games I've played.
We'll have to see how they've balanced it too, right? Because the part of the thing that you have to remember with this is that, like, if that's your only, you have to have other adrenaline spenders as well, because otherwise you could wait until you had high necrosis stacks, but why would you if, like, you can only, you know, it takes you 4 or 5 basics to build up enough, which it does, to build up enough necrosis deck to build up 2 necrosis decks. At that point, you're adrenaline neutral by firing this off just as basics and this as your rotation, right? So you have to have other adrenaline costs, and when you get to higher levels anyways, you have higher adrenaline costs. So this effectively says you can play the adrenaline mini game at an early level without a ton of abilities. And like when you look at the basic abilities with the class, right, the stuff that's unlocked at level 3 and the actual basic attack that generates that 9% adrenaline, those things are, the damage on them averages 100% ability damage, which is, as basics go, pretty standard. Like, that is weaker than every end game basic that you would ever use for melee right now. And it's like on par with many of the weaker basic abilities for magic and ranged. So, like, I want to be a little careful in terms of making comparisons. Yeah. This is one of the things I want to talk about, because we don't necessarily know, right? Like, this ability that uses up to 60% adrenaline, like, it is the equivalent of a strong threshold ability, which is 15% adrenaline cost. The damage it deals is a strong threshold ability for the other combat styles. It's, like, only slightly better than, say, Snapshot or Wild Magic. But at the same time, 60% adrenaline, potentially down lower depending on how many ways you have of building up these necrosis stacks. Something that would have the same adrenaline cost would be like a Dark Bow special, which very similar adrenaline cost, but almost twice the damage. Same thing with some of the other recent melee specials. That like 60% adrenaline is about the cost range where you're getting into like the burst from like a Dark Bow or like a Dragon Longsword with a double spec, those kinds of things.
Yeah. But
you know, this compared to other styles, like, I'm a little scared to do the comparison, but if I'm going to make that, it's like I need to be able to build enough necrosis to use this, but at the same time, I have to have enough adrenaline spenders, because of like these adrenaline costs, the only things we have to compare them to are special attacks. And so, you know, we'll have to see how the balance feels. I'm sure they've tested it, and the balance on it feels good, right? It sounds like we've gotten good feedback from
the content creators,
our end game community,
and that's how it was supposed to be. And I think with that, we get to, like you said, the soul of the skill, no pun intended, Necromancy Souls, is that it's a combination of what we know, but something different, while also just allowing you, in effect, to morph it into your own beast. Does that sound like a good way of describing it, I guess?
Yeah. I mean, I think the best way to like use that as an example of like making it your own is the soul mechanic that they talk about in the blog post, where you get this soul sap ability that pulls one residual soul from your target once every 5.4 seconds. And then with that soul, you have the option to hold on to it and build up more to do a strong single target attack, or you can spend a singular soul at a time to do a stronger area attack.
Yeah. And I also want to say,
again, it's all resource management of these things that are not resources we're used to managing.
Yeah. At level 8, you unlock something called the Touch of Death, which is 270 to 330% damage. And with this, or sorry, that's not the one I was looking for.
That's
one of
Finger
the other,
Death, yeah. You're looking for Touch of Death,
yeah,
which is...
You generate two
necrosis
two
decks,
necrosis decks,
and
yeah.
It's basically a basic attack, but it's got a 15-second cooldown.
Yeah.
So basically, every 15 seconds, you replace your basic attack with basic attack plus 2 necrosis decks.
And then you make the decision, are you going to revo these sorts of things and whatnot? I want to ask Tanis and Zant on this after hearing about the resource management angle on this, and I will go to Zant first because I imagine Tanis's is going to be more accessibility related. But after hearing this resource management angle, does that make you happier or more likely to jump into this faster? How does it make you feel?
I think it's interesting because I guess one of the things with RS Combat that I kind of struggle with is the resource management of things that are kind of like beyond abilities and such, like all the other things going into it, like your switches and such. And it just sounds like it's taking some of that and just putting it into the actual combat rotation itself. So you can kind of just focus on that. And At least that's what I read from it, someone who's like moderately into combat. Which to me sounds nice. It sounds like something I could probably wrap my head around. But then again, I wonder, like, where is it going to go from there? Because, like, you know how the RuneScape players are. We will always find the best way to use something.
Somebody will math it out, yeah.
Yeah. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens with that and, like, how it gets worked in. I'm honestly just excited to kind of watch that unfold and just sit here with my popcorn while doing some Slayer.
Yeah, because, you know, let's be honest, basics plus maybe, you know, the a couple of necromancy abilities every so often for most Slayers is going to be just fine. So, Tanis, how does resource management make you feel if it's resource management that's going to make you excel at this?
Well, it makes me a little more apprehensive. You know, the things that I was hoping to get were going to be sustainability and kind of ease of access. Resource management doesn't necessarily go along quite so well with that, but I'm hoping to, like, put it, you know, in a good way of, like, that all kind of being built to the way that you build, right? Like, so in a way, maybe it just gives you more customization. I don't know.
It's the thing, and I mentioned it earlier too. Like, we don't. I don't want to make any judgments yet because I don't know what builds are going to be viable and what bars are. Like, it could be like the other styles. I can just give you a bar and say, "Here, use this. Go. Revolution is your friend." With this, like, there may be some, like, literally, like, two ability revolution bars that, like, when this is up, you use it. And then it gives you a resource so that the next skill on your bar will fire. Done. Like, it might be super plug-and-play. Like, I don't know how these command abilities work, right? Like, there's four or three types of summons. Be a preacher, dummy, skeletons, and ghosts. Yeah. And each of them has a command ability. And it's like, maybe, like, if Revolution can just proc those, like, thing just does damage. Like, I don't... We can't say yet. There's definitely a world where the resource management literally takes care of itself for the most part. We don't know. So that seems to be the skill within the skill, and it's just a matter of, like, if you don't choose to apply that, if you just send it, does it cause you problems? We don't know yet. And it might not.
And that's what I'm worried about with you, Tanis, is that if it does come down to that, you know, you get this basic... core necromancy combat style that you're able to, you know, just run and use. But if you really want to, you know, tap into this, you're going to need to manage resources. And this is why I was, you know, on Sunday when we talked, I was trying to bring this forward to you and say, you know, let's just wait and see until we start jumping up and down about this, because I'm going to be 100% honest here. You're probably the most excited person I know for Monday.
Yeah, I hadn't resource management necessarily come into. It wasn't something that I thought about. But it also depends how inventive can I get what can be,
and how forgiving are the rotations going to be.
I'm not going, like, for Solak level, Shane. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
fair.
I just want to kill.
Like, I feel like if you could get God Wars 2 done, that would be the happy point, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would like to be able to do next. I think that's doable with somebody. Definitely think I could do KK. I think there's probably a way that I could get, you know, some alerts where I could maybe take on the spider if I ran into that right left type of thing. I think, you know, I was hoping that there might be ways, and even if there isn't, it might be time for PBM push no matter what.
Yeah, it's always a good thing. And one thing I want to talk about next with this is some of the incantations. And once again, we're just going to go based on the ones that are highlighted on the news post, because there's going to be a whole boatload of these that we can dive into, and I'd imagine we can do an entire episode on the incantations if we wanted to. But the ones that are highlighting are the lesser and greater bone shields, which allow you to use non-offensive abilities that require shield using necromancy runes. And big question with this is how effective these are going to be. I know they said they were going to be a reduced effectiveness compared to if you were to just equip the shield, which makes sense because you want to have the shield be still be powerful and not necessarily need to, you know, let's just, you know, move away from it, sort of thing. So I think that's interesting too, that, you know, you could potentially, you know, cast your resonance or your barricade or something like that while you have bone shield up and get some effect of it. So I'm actually looking forward to that because those shield swaps have according to these hurt people sometimes.
At 50% of your necromancy level, so it'll cap at level 60. When you're at 120, it'll give you a level 60 shield.
How do we feel about it that? Is that enough?
Yeah, I mean, so there's a lot of defensive abilities that don't scale, right? So things like Reflect doesn't scale off of it at all. Debilitate will still be powerful, but will be weaker. Like Reflect is honestly going to be your biggest probably defensive, which is, you know, because it's normally shield locked. That's going to be, rather than Debilitate, which is not shield locked, it's going to be something. I mean, I'm just very interested to see exactly how this works, like, because it says it's just toggleable. So when you activate the incantation, is it toggleable for a specific period afterwards?
No, it's just on.
Do you
have
to spend these necromantic runes every time you cast a defensive? Like, when does the cost get incurred? And then does it have a defense? Does it have a offensive cost? Like, because if it doesn't have an offensive cost to using the shield, why wouldn't I just have the shield active at all times?
That's a very good question, because I know initially when they started trickling out some of the necromancy information, the bone shield abilities in particular were a one-and-done ability, as in you would press bone shield and then activate your reflect, and that would be it, and you would have that rune cost. And then they heard,
I mean, and that
they
makes
heard
sense
feedback
too.
That it should
like
be
it doesn't
a
say,
toggle.
It says it gives you a level 50 shield, but that doesn't, you know... Does that necessarily mean that shield is like it doesn't affect your defensive stats at all? Probably it's just it will act as if your next defensive was fired out of a shield that size, which means that a lot of defensives that like you would fire resonance out of greater bone shield, but you'd fire like reflect out of lesser bone shield? Question mark. I don't know.
Yeah, and once again, questions that are only going to be figured out by getting our hands on it. But I feel right. Like that's also a substantial quality of life feature for people who never really wanted to use a shield swap to begin with. So this is going to put that on the table there. And then, you know, the rune crafting and whatnot. We talked about that previously. We'll talk more about that when it arrives. The next place I want to go is the unlockable talent tree, in that initially you're not going to have all the abilities unlocked, but you will have them all unlocked by the time you hit level 120. So that's going to be really interesting. You're going to have to make decisions about what you unlock. And for those people going through the skill first, I'd imagine there's going to be lots of difficult decisions being made, because I don't know if you're able to, in effect, to rewind and re-choose talents, or if it's you just choose them as you're going and then you unlock more as you progress through the skill. As in, is there like a reset button? Oops, I made a mistake, is what I'm wondering with this.
But the vibe that I got was eventually you'll just have them all anyways.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
So maybe it doesn't matter in that regard, but what if you choose a bad one on the way and you're kind of hosed on your way up to level 99?
Deal with it.
Oh no.
Deal with it. I mean, like I see like the greater bone shield is in there. I see the life transfer they talk about above in the blog post in there, both on the same tier. And then I see, like, the scythe looks like it has three tiers, so I'm guessing that upgrades that ability three times?
Yeah.
Or something?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But with that, we know those are on the way, as with the incantations. And the recap, of course, for everybody else. Level 90 armor. All the way up to level 90 armor. And at level 70, you're going to get to choose between tank and power armor. You know, we learned this in Fresh Start Worlds. Just give people armor that levels up with them. And we complained that, you know, it wasn't special enough in Fresh Start. Well, here we are, being baked into RuneScape's next skill. The ability to get armor all the way up to level 90.
Augmentable,
and,
right?
Yes. And it takes away a huge barrier, I think, to people doing PVM, if I'm being honest.
So. To some degree, I am a little concerned because I do see some places that they recommend you have specific robes available going into necromancy.
Like the subjugations and whatnot?
Spider Silk, Mystic, and Subjugation in particular. So I'm a little maybe worried that Subjugation is about, like, I don't know
yeah.
how any of that's going or how that ended up on the wiki even. I'll be totally honest
with
you.
Well, they released a list and they kept adding to it. And my sense is that you'll use those different types of existing armor in game to craft the necromancy armor.
Yeah, that's my guess too, but like I'm here to tell you, subjugation is not that cheap. Like
No, and it's been going up. People have been having a fun time sitting at Zamorak God War 1.
And I am very excited to kill him with necromancy when I approach level 70. Yeah.
I mean,
but like
hey.
Yeah, go ahead, Tanis.
Oh, I said I made my own set.
Oh shit, you already have a set?
Yeah, that I got myself.
Oh my god, you're ahead of me. Like grinding. I mentioned in pre-show, this is very much the case of Christmas EVM being grind. Christmas being just days away, and I haven't bought any gifts yet.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
But I like that armor, and I like the fact you're going to be able to choose. I think that combined with the weapon is probably the smart way to go for this, and it's definitely providing that compelling on-ramp to people. So, I want to move on to what I feel are some of the biggest changes that are being highlighted here. And
yeah, let's do that.
And I know, Thaxi, you said that you think they might not be too big, so we'll come to you after yeah. Zant and Tanis on this, but they are reworking the way you get combat XP in that it will be proportional to the amount of damage you do, and most creatures will be at a rate of 50 XP to 1,000 health. So with that, it scales nicely based on how much HP each creature you have is for getting combat XP. How do you feel about that, Tanis?
You know, unless I've missed something, I figured it's going to be a matter of figuring out what the biggest glass cannons are and how fast you can pop their balloon. And that's going to basically decide what are the best combat XP rates. But, you know, yep. I mean, I think combat XP rates have always been super fast. Anyway, right? And it's not as grindy. So I don't think
you don't
unless
think it's
I'm
that
missing
big of a problem.
I don't know if it's gonna be that. I just don't feel like it's that big of a nerf. I feel like it just changes what people will find to fight. What's the best thing's gonna be.
Alright, how about you, Zan?
One hope I have with this is that I feel like certain things, like in this example blog post, they show a cow going from 150 HP to 1100 HP. To me, like things like that seem like it's kind of somewhat getting us back to things feeling like times to kill somewhat as they were before EOC. Because I remember when EOC came out, there was just a ton of monsters that just felt like you just melt them now. They just, the amount of time it takes to kill them is
guaranteed
just severely reduced.
One shot a bullet level 5, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. And now I'm just thinking about that. What, 1100 HP cow to someone who's not like maxed combat, that's not guaranteed to be instant. So, like, I feel like this is just like a big passive, them kind of touching things up like that, which in my eyes,
probably needed to happen, right?
It's probably going to be good for the game. Like, it's probably going to be felt by us in a very odd way. And it's going to change kind of, you know, like as Tanis was mentioning, you know, we'll know what monsters to go kill to get the best XP and stuff, and that will get all reconfigured, figure out the new glass cannons and such. But, yeah, I think it'll be a good thing overall.
All right. Yelps has an XP buff from 404 to 10,000.
Yelps can go and spin in a hole.
All right.
Go ahead. The thing with for me on this is, like, they seem to be fixing a lot of the core issues they created with EOC.
Yeah.
Where in the lead up to EOC and then the actual drop of it, we all HP values went from 1 to 100 times that 1, right? So for players, we went from 99 max HP to 9900 max HP, right? Monsters didn't all receive the same treatment. Too many quest bosses had less than 10,000 HP. Like, far too many. Quests became a joke, right? We all, like, we've done the Dominion Tower since then. Everything just gets either one-shot or is just annoying. Because mechanics, not because of health bars. Like, cows have 150 HP. That means a cow has 1.5 health in the original RuneScape system. Like, they made some decisions to lower what health should be to, I don't know why. Maybe because it, like, to prevent level 3s from being able to die to the cow pen? I don't know. And so it seems like they're just kind of like, they're doing some undo of that, but a lot. So I've looked through both the life points and the XP changes, or like the stat changes and the XP changes. They had a lot of stat changes, or a lot of XP changes. Everything in the game pretty much got an XP change. The life point and stat changes, like, in a lot of cases, it's just like they gave a monster that didn't have a magic and range level one magic and range. Like, the quite a majority of it is next to no change. Or they bumped the max hit of something, you know, up by like 20%. Like, it's nothing terribly changed other than the HP values. And the majority of HP values that changed are very low-level monsters getting HP values that are no longer one-shottable. They raised a ton of stuff that had less than 2,000 life points into an appropriate, like, 700 to, like, 9,000 life point range that made things, like, they do what they should be. Like, Bloodvelds are definitely one of the big winners there. They went from 5,000 to, like, 10,000. They have no defense. They've always been a good training monster. That's probably why they were on the blog post for this on, like, the front page.
And they're
going
to continue to be after that with the higher HP pool for Necromancy.
See, but not actually.
No, okay.
So, very good. Low-level training, going to feel much better. Like, I do not, like, previously, you kill two monsters with a friend in Elite Dungeon 3, you're suddenly level 50, ta-da, you move on with your life. Now that, like, I'm going to enjoy the low-level training because they've given a lot of these monsters that are on, basically on Terrail and Spria and, like you know, the low-level Slayer monsters, you know, Mashna, all these people's Slayer lists, they've given them an appropriate life point value to make them actually feel like you're going to be getting something out of killing them rather than, like, you get 5 XP from a cow. Nice, I suppose. You're actually going to get, you know, 50 XP or whatever it is that will make them feel worth doing as a task where you'll gain a bunch of levels quickly. But if you look at something like, let me find Bloodvelds. Oh, that's the Heart of Galenor. Yeah, it's like Bloodvelds with 10,000 XP, they're up to 50 XP per each town. They actually did go up in XP. They went up from like 238 to 512 XP per, which isn't crazy. But it's like, I suppose that's better. The vast, and I do mean vast majority, of targets on the new old to new XP system lost XP per life point value. Yeah.
Yeah.
The XP per hour on almost every monster in the game, especially like a lot of Slayer monsters, is down by like half.
Yeah, and the reason like, they did
Muspas
this...
Muspas used to be a great training place. Muspas are not... Do not go train at Muspas anymore, please.
Because what they were initially going to do is they're actually going to put an XP embargo and artificially lower the amount of XP you got when training Necromats.
Right.
So what they did instead was this balance pass that just affects all the different combat styles.
Right. But like Abyssal Lords, last patch, 10,000 XP per kill, combat XP. New patch, 3,700. Like... Oh. Abyssal Tentacles, that's from them. Abyssal Leeches are down. Where's Abyssal Demons? Heart of Gilinor, they're down from 952 to 400. Abyssal Demons, the base Abyssal Demon is down from 661 to 425 XP per kill. Almost everything in the game lost between a third and two-thirds of its XP per kill.
So the sense then is that this is just fixing the things that came in with EOC that effectively, dare I say it, made combat
has been too fast to train.
Combat too fast to train. And with Necromancy, it kind of puts us back in that wheelhouse of being able to have a good training method with the Necromancy
skill. I'm not saying you
skill.
Should go get your fire staves and go elk on the walls of Castle Wars for magic XP, but... They're undoing a lot of the like this is a very big nerf to things. And again, I've been saying for a while that I would like to go back to the XP per LP threshold. And we like the other thing is accuracy, right? They brought up accuracy when they were in this section of the blog post too.
Yeah, but
that,
I don't
like,
think
Necromancy
they touched
is going to have 100% accuracy, but your damage, if you have 61%, if you would have had 61% accuracy against a monster, you'll deal a scaled down portion of your max damage hits.
Which I think is smart when you think about it, right? Because that
it's
also...
It's going to feel much more consistent and satisfying, I think, to not miss. Like, that got rid of a very frustrating portion of a lot of the early and middle game, but it's also going to mean that you don't... Like, basically, all of accuracy and strength is now a singular stat. They just both apply scalars to your damage. Strength makes number bigger. Accuracy brings number up to that cap, potentially. Maybe. But, like...
That's actually a good way of looking at it. And I think bringing it back to the XP values and the changes that were made, this is just, in general, a pass on... the combat XP for the other combat styles, and they're very open. They say that, hey, if you guys like what we did here with accuracy, we can look at bringing that to the other styles as well eventually.
And criticals.
Yeah.
Because criticals were the other big change.
Yeah, let's talk about crits right now. Does anybody have anything else on the stats before we move on to criticals, Tanis, Zant? No?
I will say final impression, like my impression of it, at the end of the day, is that they made a change that needed to be made. Like, I'm not mad about it, but it's definitely a serious nerf to a lot of combat training.
Yeah.
Like, all those Slayer block lists, get wrecked, they're going to need to be redone significantly, because the XP rates,
oh
I think,
God.
Are going to be down across the board, and you know, kill the things that you're gonna have fun killing. You're still gonna do well with it, but getting 120s in combat skills is now going to be like, you know what they didn't change? The XP from combat dummies.
I was wondering about that. Yeah,
I should use those on double XP this weekend. See how far I can get in one of those.
Yeah, because they won't work for necromancy. But yeah, no. So you know. Good changes. They needed to be made. I'm actually glad that things are back on a per HP basis, even if, like, when you, again, compare it, the, like, 100 to 1 from old school to RS3, old school has, I mean, they deal a lot less damage than we do, but they also get almost 10 times as much XP per monster HP as we do. So, you know, it is what it is. Which is funny, because we still train faster than they do, don't get me wrong, but...
Tanis, I thought that would bother you that we're seeing an XP nerf on combat. Because
well,
you are
I mean,
going for 120 all.
Yeah, but I mean, it's combat. How slow can it really
I'll still be fast. Easy. That's the point. Yeah.
All right.
So that's that. Let's talk.
Yeah,
crits. Yeah.
I've always wanted to see more diversity in RuneScape's crit system. I'm going to be 100% honest with that. And I think this is a walking path towards that. Necromancy will have a base critical strike chance of 10%. So when you hit a target, you're rolling a 10-sided die to see if that should be a crit. And if so, we'll apply a 1.25 times damage multiplier, or plus 25%, to the attack. And then, as you level up Necromancy, that critical strike damage number increases all the way up to 1.75 times. So at level 20, it's 25%, 30, 30%, 40, 35%, and at level 50, 40%, and of course that just continues on as you level
5%
up
5% every level, yeah.
Necromancy over 10. On that skill. And this also applies to the existing critical systems, like the Biting Gizmos from Invention, Erithor's Grimoire, and the Reaver's Ring will all work alongside these systems. Now, these systems are only going to be active with Necromancy, but if it resonates with the player base, then they can look to include it in other combat styles. Please, God, please, please do this. This is something that has always been something that I'd wanted for the other styles.
I'll say hold your brakes just a second,
okay.
Because quick reminder that for the entire rest of the game, our base crit strike damage is, drumroll please, 20%. That's right, Necromancy will have the same value at level 10. And at level 20, it's already passed. So you really have to remember that when, like, this, if you applied this to the rest of the game, it would have to have much lower scaling. Much, much, much lower scaling. If you gave plus 75% crit damage to, like, magic, where crits are king because of crit stick and everything else, like, man, like, they crit a lot. They crit a lot. Like, with the Seer's Ring upgrade, the Channeler's Ring, like, you can hit up to 50% critical chance on some abilities and specials. Like, if you just guaranteed that special suddenly did 175% damage instead of 120, like,
okay,
that is,
so it would need some work. So it would need some work then. But also reading
it also
into
means
this,
you have to read tooltips very differently.
Yeah.
So we were talking about comparing Necromancy to, like, other styles. You have to remember that, like, when a Necromancy tooltip says it does 270 to 330% ability damage, that's, like, build in a little caveat in your brain there that if you crit, that is literally a dark bow. Like, that's still gross. Like, it's a regular old snapshot if it hits normally, but if it crits, that crit matters a lot.
Now, the interesting part about this, if I'm reading this right, does this mean Necromancy is potentially going to do more damage at the high end than our other styles?
Mm-mm. No, it's all in how they do the scaling on it, right? Like, we haven't seen all of the abilities, but very few of the abilities seem to have the type of scaling we see from other styles in terms of the, like, max hit things. Like, I haven't seen anything that's too far above 300-400% ability damage. And it also, like, will hit crit cap. All the styles are still hitting cap, you know, damage cap when they crit. So, like, to some degree, that might not matter. But what it does say is that the Biting Gizmos and the Reaver's Ring, for example, which give, you know, 7% and 5% crit damage, whatever it is. Those are crit chance,
aren't
they?
Those are crit
chance. My brain just did a shoot. Yeah. So, I mean, those are going to be more valuable for this combat style.
I'm just frantically trying to think if I have any more parts to make more Biting Four Gizmos as we're sitting here.
I mean, we'll kill Rax with the new thing. Like, it's, you know, we'll be doing.
Yeah.
By the time we hit
level
80 or
90,
we'll
be doing
Reapers.
So is this a good thing or a bad thing, then? Because to me, this looks like a good thing still.
I mean, hit big number. Big number make us happy. We learned that with the Dragon Long changes. That, like, it's not necessarily the best thing, but it hit big number and big number good. So, you know, the community clearly wants to see it. I'm here for it. And again, base critical strike for the rest of the game, 5%. You have a 5% chance of hitting a critical strike for any other combat style at base. This is 10. So they're bumping up critical chance and critical damage to a not insignificant margin as part of this.
But am I wrong in feeling that this will make a properly optimized necromancy build stronger than the other ones with that?
Well, because it depends on the base numbers, right?
Okay.
It could make it more volatile because you're crit reliant.
Right. Okay.
To do your damage, and you might do less damage if you don't crit. Like, that's kind of my expectation is that, I mean, maybe new style's supposed to go burr and they'll balance it down. You know, it could be. That could be. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. And you know, like we know you
although
want.
Although I kind of would be, but.
You want your new toys to be nice and shiny with that. Zantanis, any thoughts on the. On the critical strike stuff, or is this just, you know, hey, I'm just gonna do the best build I can and the crits are gonna come along the way kind of thing?
I'm a ranger that's never held a crit stick, so
okay, fair.
There you go.
Figure it can't be wrong if it feels so right.
All right, fair enough. Well, I don't know that there's anything else left to discuss on combat necromancy stuff. And keep in mind, folks, this is all very preliminary. Once we get our feet wet and start dabbling, it could substantially change our opinions on this. But I'm very optimistic. Tanis, you still feel good?
Yeah, I'm still optimistic.
All right.
A little less than before. I'm still hopeful.
All right. How about you, Zant?
Yeah, man, I'm excited. Like, necromancy is kind of the thing that will be getting me back into this game, and it is the thing motivating me to play on double XP right now. So I'm hyped to really get in and dig into it. I think it'll be fun. And also, it's just going to be cool to be kind of like a combat noob in a way again. Like, that's a very exciting aspect of it.
Yeah, because you didn't do Fresh Start with us, did you?
I did not. I just had a lot going on when that was going on. I wanted to. But yeah, I just wasn't able to.
Yeah. All right.
Also, quick shout out from the last thing this blog post lists is that the things that will buff XP on release, because they're not doing a full embargo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not going to say everybody should go get Torstal Instant 6. I think that, personally, I think that's a little extra. But making, like, having your 119 archaeology so you can get your Inspire Awe relic going. I'm just saying, archaeology good, y'all.
Yeah. It's Inspire Awe, Torstal Sticks, the Wise Perk, and the Bic God Book.
Yeah. Which we won't be able to augment things, I don't believe, until we hit level 70 plus anyways.
Correct.
So
correct.
I'm not gonna be worrying about that one immediately on.
And having
the relic set up is good.
Yeah, and I know there was a discussion back or forth of whether or not the clan avatar would be in there. They decided not to include the clan avatar in that, so that's
probably
fair.
Good.
So, we'll be back next week with a bunch of necromancy stuff. We're still formulating how that show is going to look, but we can guarantee that we'll be bringing it to you. Anybody have any final necromancy thoughts before we move on to our achievements and picks of the week? No?
I didn't dive in.
All right. Well, Zant, you got your work cut out for us. Let's begin.
All right. So with our achievements of the week, starting off with Arcane with 200 million attack XP and 200 million constitution XP on the second. We've got Forex with 99 hunter and 99 cooking also on the second. Good Bourbon with 99 agility, Keski Rocks with 120 archaeology, Lord Earth with 120 invention, Luke Totodile with 120 fire making, Mr. M with 99 attack and 99 strength, Noonie 01 with 99 divination. We have Shane 12088 with 120 fire making. Big clap for Shane. We also have Shane Remy with 120 farming. We have Taryn Alden with 99 fire making. And then on the first, we have Arcane with 120 strength and 120 attack. We have Forex with 99 rune crafting. We have Lord Dusty with 120 fletching. And Pony Picker with 120 cooking, attack, strength, and ranged, all on the first.
Right on.
All right, moving on, we have Popo with 120 crafting, Queen Rapal with 99 attack, Rune Dragon with 120 invention, we have Terry Dax, 120 invention, and 99 magic. We have Taddeo with 22 with 99 fishing, Vivian with 120 herb lore, Woody 1 with 120 agility, ouch. We have Scotty with 120 cooking, Arcane with 120 magic and range. We have Hephaestus 5 with 99 summoning and 99 magic. Jamandy 52 with 200 mil attack and 120 rune crafting. Nice. And Law Monster with 99 rune crafting.
Nicely done.
Continuing on July 31st, we had Lord Dusty with 120 ranged and strength, Netherios with 99 mining, Popo with 120 runecrafting, Queen RuPaul with 99 invention, Rob with 200 million crafting, Terry Dax with 99 constitution. Then on the 30th, we had Hephaestus with 99 construction, and Lantisex with 99 archaeology, as well as Nate the Great with 120 construction, and Netherios with 120 divination, Sayo Aces with 120 magic and agility, Smarty Pants with 120 attack, Terry Dax with 99 strength, and WM Penguin with 120 farming.
Righto, and then continuing on, rounding this out, we have Arcane with 120 constitution on the 29th, Battle Slash with 120 invention, Hephaestio 5 with 99 cooking, Netherios with 99 fletching, cooking, and construction, Psy Oasis with 120 strength, Terry Dax with 120 herb lore. Then moving on to the 28th, we have Hephaestio 5 with 99 herb lore, Netherios with 99 smithing, Samurai Jack with 120 summoning, Terran Eldon with 99 hunter, Totally with 120 archaeology, XOX, Scotty XOX with 120 construction. Then on the 27th, we have Tiztox Rex with 200 million constitution, Samurai Jack with 120 defense. Then on the 23rd, Terry Dax with 99 crafting, prayer, woodcutting, fletching, and firemaking on the 22nd there. Then on the 21st, we have Lord Earth with 99 runecrafting, Shadowled with 120 dungeoneering, and Queen RuPaul on the 20th with 99 mining. Congratulations, everybody. That's the first half of double XP, and then some. I see we've all been busy with that. So we're going to move on to picks of the week. Tanis, you're up first with yours. We might have talked about this when Jagex announced this as one of their publishing games, but now...
I've been playing this game, and have you ever wondered what RuneScape would be like if they just, if everything was AFK and it never timed you out, and it, instead of little characters doing things, you just saw little bars going up and down.
So you press button and thing happens.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And of course, you're talking about Melvor Idol, just for anybody unaware of this at this point.
Yes, Melvor Idol. It kind of reminded me of, I don't know if anyone would remember this, but they did an early Idol game. I think it was like Idol Adventures.
Yeah.
This is like kind of really perfecting that format out.
Yeah, and it's got a more, solid RuneScape angle to it too.
Yeah, it's pretty. I mean, you recognize everything from RuneScape. You know how kind of have this basic knowledge how everything works, and I mean, there's a couple different skills, but It's just a neat little game, and it's really cheap. And it's funny because, you know, I open up the game and it says, you know, you can buy an expansion. Expansion?
No, you're on the expansion kick again.
So I bought the expansion. And you know what? They're doing another expansion in September. I'm like, that's interesting. So in Melver Idol, all skills go to 120.
And I bet you're enjoying that. I don't know. I've never really got into the Idol games with that, but I definitely see them popping up a lot on Steam because of that's you know who the group is, right? So I think it's interesting. And, you know, might have to give it a go. There's a mobile version of it too. That's interesting. Now that's got my eyes open. I don't know if it's the full game or whatnot, but that's linked on Steam. Currently on sale, 40% off. So if you're wanting to pick that up now, would be a good time to do it. I think we talked about it when it was acquired to be one of Jagex's first publishing games. So good pick of the week. I'm going to go to you, Zant, and I feel like for people who know you, this one's going to be obvious.
Yeah, so it's funny because last time I was on the show, it was actually like the weekend this game launched. And that is The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, which, in case you don't know, is the sequel to Breath of the Wild, which is
the series. That was your game.
Yeah, it was a game that I actually was really into speedrunning for a while. Like, I was on Games Done Quick for commentary a couple times, and I got a little too into that game, per se. But Tears of the Kingdom came out, and I've completely played it now. And if you're a Zelda fan, you kind of just need to play this game. It's one of those magical games that only comes around every now and then. And the funny thing is, like, I said the same thing about Breath of the Wild, but this game is making me almost want to take that back about Breath of the Wild, because it took everything that that game did and kind of iterated upon it. And it feels like it's attempting to be a Zelda game before it's attempting to be an open world game.
And that's important for the Zelda people, I know.
It is very important. And it's great. Like, it has actual dungeons, which is something that the main Breath of the Wild game lacked. They feel satisfying. And I must say, there's a specific one of them. It is the one that takes place in the Rito, like, icy area of the game. Whole sequence through that dungeon, through the boss and everything, that has got to be one of the most masterpiece sequences in a video game I've ever played. It was insane. The scale of it was insane. The music was insane. The way it evolved, it was just epic. And almost everyone I've talked to about it is just awestruck at that one part of the game. But I think higher level, this game was kind of situated in a very unique place that I don't think many games have or will have again. Because it is literally a direct sequel to Breath of the Wild, taking place in the same world. Like, this game takes place in the same base map as Breath of the Wild, but with the addition of these sky islands that have fallen from the heavens, and also these chasms that have opened up that reveal this whole underground layer of the map that's literally the entire size of the base overworld and fully explorable, just huge underground cavern. And they've added more caves to the overworld and more things to do, and they've just really done a really good job at taking this world and pushing it forward in time, maybe 5 years in the game's narrative. Like, every little character you go talk to that mentions something in Breath of the Wild, you can see growth in them. Even these little minor NPCs.
Even the Koroks?
Even some of the Koroks. They have buddies that you have to help them out with now, too.
I have to ask about that, because that was, you know, the game came out and I saw, of course, the biggest thing online is that people have taken to torturing these poor things.
Yeah, so this game has this thing called Ultra Hand, which Breath of the Wild had a mechanic called Magnesis, which lets you basically control anything magnetic and just move it. But Ultra Hand lets you control anything. and kind of like stick them together and build things out of it. And there's a lot of like electronic equipment and stuff like that they can build together and make these like vehicles and robots and all kinds of crazy stuff that function. And there's a great system for like recalling your previous builds and such. And it's crazy. Like you can literally put Koroks up on a cross if you want. And people have done that.
I've seen Spitfire roast too.
Oh yeah. And the possibilities endless. And like this system is so robust that people have even made logic gates within this game and partially now functioning calculators.
Yeah.
And it's theorized that like with that, you know, if you could make a logic gate, you could theoretically program a whole game within the game. If you actually have the environment for it, which obviously you don't really do because you can only make like a single logic gate given the constraints of the building system. But just the fact that that exists in a Zelda game, like, dude, what?
I love it. I love it. I really do. And you know, not just for the meme value. I've never actually played a Zelda game before on that. Actually, not many of the Nintendo games. But this definitely caught my eye for that. Tanis or Thaxi, you guys ever play this or any of the Zelda games?
I haven't played this, but it sounds awesome. Breath of the Wild was the last one, and yeah,
started Breath of the Wild, and the durability system on it put me off. I have pretty much 100%ed. Oh my goodness, why am I, the Wii, the one that came out on the Wii, oh my goodness.
Skyward Sword?
Zant, it's the one you're in.
Twilight Princess,
several yeah, times. Like, I'm a big fan of the games, but I didn't get stuck in with Breath of the Wild, and I'm a little bit afraid, for Tears of the Kingdom, that like the durability system is still there. So, but I've heard that they made it better. So maybe
curious.
At some point I'll go and poke it.
I'm curious what you'd think of it. They basically made it so it's still a durability system, but you can fuse things together. So like you can take any weapon.
Durability massively. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, the depth that has is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a little annoying though. But
depths.
But I mean, that's not to say this game doesn't have its flaws. Like there are definitely some weird progression issues, and it's still. I gotta say the menus and UI in this game are kind of weak. Like when you're fusing things together, you have the ability to like fuse any item to an arrow that you shoot.
Oh
and
my god!
When you do that, you press up on the D-pad when you're shooting an arrow, and you get this just. Single row scrolling menu of every item you have.
Oh my.
Just so it's like you get this weird cycle. Oh, here's an enemy. Here, let me jump up there, slow down time. Here, let me bring up my menu, and then let me scroll for like 45 seconds. So it's like, it's like literally when I'm watching people stream, they get into this menu and it's just scrolling, 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 scrolling. So there's parts of it that are kind of bad like that. But the points that this game does well, it does so insanely well. And it's just something I haven't seen anywhere else in gaming. I know I've been on a tirade, but one tiny thing that just stood out to me and made me really happy in this game. And I just need to get this off my chest. When I was speedrunning this game, there was this one character in one of the stables that wanted to like take his money to the Great Fairies to basically, you know, please the Great Fairy and do what the Great Fairy wanted, which is money. But he was too nervous to do it. And so he gives Link his money to go give it to the Great Fairy. However, when I was speedrunning the game, every time we'd get to that point, we'd just take his rupees and run. Because it's just this dumbass giving us 500 rupees.
Oh, God.
And we would take it, we'd buy armor with it.
Oh.
And he's just this really minor, really insignificant character. But
you're exploiting him.
To people who speedran the game, he had a bit of a meaning to it. But in Tears of the Kingdom, there are these little like monster dispatch kind of units that members of the kingdom, just like everyday people, have like created to go out and take out monster camps. And he's the leader of one of them. And when I found him at one of those little events, and he was there on the horse with a sword and everything, I was just so happy that this just random character from Breath of the Wild has just grown that much. And they've really taken that world and pushed it forward like that.
down to characters like that. And I just, the attention to detail there, it makes me geek like crazy.
That shows you got a bunch of devs on it who are really involved and invested in the IP.
Right? I'm sure that was such a fun game to develop. I can't even imagine.
All right. But that's anyways. Tears of the Kingdom, Switch. Links in the show notes to both picks of the week at update.show. What have we been doing? Tanis, what have you been doing for Double XP?
Gathering bone.
Still.
Gathering bones. Yeah.
You don't think you have too many?
We'll see.
All right. Fair enough. And I guess we'll know very shortly about that too, right? Yeah. So. All right. Thaxi, I do you want to update the listeners with where you're at? I know RS hasn't really been a possibility until recently.
RS, getting back into it. I am still in the process of fixing the damage done to my accounts. I still have not been able to get back. I've submitted 3 reports with literally every field filled, and I know it's accurate because I have email reference of like creating the account and everything. I still haven't gotten the alt back, which is a little frustrating, but we'll get, like, I have the main, that's the big important one. And we're working on getting some of the gear back onto it. And, you know, shout out to everybody who's offered me items. I appreciate you immensely. And when I have figured out exactly what I'm able to get back, I will let you know what we're doing there. And that's the plan, is that we're, if nothing else, come Monday, we're going to the City of Ulm with whatever we got.
Yeah, and, so. And that's the important thing to underscore, is that at least you got the main back, which Jagex was good about that, so we're very thankful for that. And you know, it is converted now to a Jagex account, and I guess this is a good time to just remind everybody that Jagex accounts do have that enhanced security for it, so if anybody out there hasn't done that, do it. And you also get the 10-minute login timer now for that too, rather than 5.
A very long and complicated password now.
Yeah, we'll just don't tell anybody it on the air, because that'd be bad.
Actually, my password is password 123. Excuse me.
Okay. Zant, how are you getting back into it?
Lots and lots of divinations.
What?
Yeah, I'm about to hit 118. Planning on getting 120 by the end of Double XP.
Oh, yeah, because that's your skill, too, because it was the purpley thing, right?
Before, yeah, and, you know, Jagex is taking away my purple max cape here in 4 days, so I'll have another purple cape by then.
Okay, whoa. Fair enough. Are you saving? No, I guess you wouldn't be saving energy for that then, so you're not going to have anything really coming out of it then, are you?
I mean, no, I have a ton of energy. I've been doing gathering the whole way.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Gathering proteins. I hate Hall of Memories.
Yep.
Your
ticking is awful.
Yeah, it's good they updated it. I
haven't tried it.
So good they updated it.
One grievance I have is that I do not have Willow yet.
No!
And,
I got hurt at 103, I'm sorry.
That's one of the pets I want the most, it's so pretty.
I got that one from Rush Start, got a little crank.
Right, and then you don't have it on the main, so you can't apply the Halo effect.
I got it on the main.
One day.
Oh, you did get it on the main, too. Okay. Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
I know it's kind of not possible for me to ever do that right now, but the Halo on Willow is like one of my favorite Halo pets.
We were talking really about cool. That, how you'd come back for Fresh Start to get the inverted divination cape and that. I feel like we all have unfinished business on Fresh Start, that after Necromancy comes down, they got to rerun that, because, you know, I got to go back. I got to get my inverted archaeology cape.
Onto something with inverted capes. I'm still holding out hopes for a League's format event.
Okay. That might be a way. Hopium.
You know what? That's it. That's what I want to happen in the next 6 months. Make me new shiny. Make me new shiny game modes.
I'm just sad I missed Fresh Start. So I want to experience that at some point.
All right. As for me, as the achievement said, I completed 120 woo. Fire making, and I'm guessing this weekend I'm gonna have to go on a bone rush and, you know, just go and grab some bones and get ready for Necromancy on Monday. This is the first prep I'm doing for it. Hopefully it's not too late, but it's been 120 fire making. And then, you know, just a bunch of real life stuff associated with that as well. Sirion and I are also continuing our old school questing venture, and it finally took a great deal of dragging me along that I finally did. I finally did Gertrude's Cat. I'm just not a cat person, and I just never really wanted
to do that. Minute quest, Kat, Shane. It's a 10-minute quest.
It was 3 minutes with the quest helper.
Oh boy.
But I got it
I'm
done.
I'm so proud of you. This is growth.
But I got it done at the end of the day on that, and then it's just fishing and cooking over there. But suffice to say, come Monday, the main focus will be RS3, and the main game will be RuneScape again, because we always talk about that, how everybody has their main games and their secondary games, and at points in time, RuneScape comes into that versus ebbing out of it. But 120 fire making was double XP. I think what I'm going to take your guys' advantage and use up all my combat dummies on double XP here, probably. That's probably the thing I ought to do next with XP. But that's all we got for this week's episode. If you guys want the show automatically delivered to you, the best way to do that is to subscribe. We're on all the podcast listeners out there. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Pocket Cast, Spotify, Amazon, and more. Just visit update.show/subscribe. And we're also on YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. We post the video versions of the shows there, plus Nibbles. And we'll be back next week for all the necromancy coverage. And of course, big thank you to Yuzant and Thaxi for joining us. Thank you. And of course, we'll all be back. Well, Tanis and I will be back next week. I don't know who's joining us yet. I don't know what that show is going to look like. I got to nail that down over the weekend. But nonetheless, there will be a podcast next week. There will be necromancy, and we will be all diving into that that new skill push that we all love so much. So with that, see you then, everyone. Take care.
See ya.
Ciao.
Later.